Welcome to Straight Talk for Real Life, produced by Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. The human body is far more powerful than most of us realize, and everyday choices that we make either support or weaken it. So let me ask you something. If you knew there were precancerous cells in your body right now, just waiting for the right conditions to grow and cause major health problems, would you do something about it? Well, listen to this.
Our bodies form microscopic cancers all the time. And it turns out that if you have a good immune system, and you've got good gut health, and you're eating the right foods, it actually tips the balance in favor of avoiding cancer, dangerous clinical cancers. There is a major breakthrough in cancer, not research, but cancer treatment, based on the Nobel Prize winning research, that our immune system can be jacked up with medicines called immunotherapies. So these are not chemotherapies, these are immune boosting therapies. Now with immunotherapy, you can, and I've seen this, you can take people with stage four, end of the game cancer, and by jacking up their immune system, you can actually get their own immune system, even if they're elderly, to rear up and reverse stage four cancer to stage zero cancer. Literally, you can wind the clock back.
If you want to prevent future health problems and perhaps even feel noticeably better right now, and who doesn't? Keep listening. You've got the power to make it happen, and it's easier than you may think. The purpose of this podcast is to foster discussion, not to provide advice. The information shared should never be used as an alternative to obtaining personalized advice from a healthcare professional. And listeners should seek such advice independently if they have any questions related to their physical or mental health. This podcast hosts different viewpoints, and the opinions of the speakers do not necessarily reflect the views of HPE. Hello and welcome to HPE's Straight Talk for Real Life. I'm Bob Peacock. Back in 2010, a physician and scientist named Dr. William Lee stepped onto a stage and asked a simple but provocative question. Can we eat to starve cancer? In that now famous TED Talk, which has been seen over 11 million times, Dr. Lee shared something surprising. Many of us carry tiny pre-disease cancers in our bodies, cells just waiting for one thing, a blood supply that will give them the nutrients they need to grow. The human body automatically builds new blood vessels, a process called angiogenesis, whenever you have a cut or an injury. But that same process can also fuel the growth of dangerous cells. Here's the hopeful part. Dr. Lee's research shows that certain foods contain natural compounds that can actually help block that process, cutting off the nutrients those cells need to grow. And this isn't just about cancer. Angiogenesis plays a role in stopping more than 70 major diseases, including ones that cause blindness, arthritis, obesity, and Alzheimer's. Diseases that affect over a billion people worldwide. 16 years after that famous TED Talk, Dr. Lee's ideas are still changing how we think about food, health, and disease. And today, we're talking with the man who helped start that conversation. Dr. William Lee is an internationally renowned physician, scientist, and co-founder of the Angiogenesis Foundation, and the voice behind one of the most influential TED Talks ever. Dr. Lee, what an honor. Welcome to Straight Talk for Real Life.
Well, thank you, Bob. It's a real pleasure to be on. Thank you for inviting me.
There is so much to talk about today, and I want to spend most of our time talking about what research shows about what we need to eat and do to live the longest, healthiest life possible. But let's start with that presentation. Did it surprise you that your TED Talk has received so much attention, to think it's been replayed 11 million times?
You know, I think when I gave my TED Talk and stepped on the stage at the Long Beach Opera House, I had never, even though I had given hundreds of lectures and speeches before, I had never really had that experience where There were entrepreneurs, journalists, tech titans. Bill Gates was in the front row tweeting about me when I was actually speaking, and I could see him. And there was no lectern. It was just me standing on this red circular carpet. And, you know, I think back then, for me, it was really just trying to deliver as clearly as I could something that I found so exciting based on my work, that we could take control of our own lives and destinies when it came to a disease as frightening as cancer, and that the secrets didn't lie in a pharmaceutical company alone, or sponsored research alone, university medical center alone, but actually that there were important clues to success that are found in our own kitchen, in our pantries, and in the farmers market and grocery stores. I found that to be absolutely so astounding and exciting that I had to share it with everyone.
With the way healthcare is moving, wouldn't you say that your message is perhaps even more relevant today than it was 16 years ago?
Well, listen, I mean, I think that we've arrived at a time where we know as individuals, as families, as community members, that we can't just rely on institutions to bail us out or optimize our lives in any way, shape, or form, right? And this is where I step in. There's a lot of dimensions to that. I'm a scientist. I study vascular biology, which is how our body grows blood vessels, your circulation. So, you know, for me, it's the taking what we know about the 60,000 miles worth of blood vessels packed in our bodies and saying, if we were to rely on ourselves, what could we do based on the science, the biology, to be able to improve or enhance our own lives, especially for prevention? So you mentioned this idea about modern healthcare. Okay, so I like how you framed it as modern healthcare, today to tomorrow. Well, let's go backwards and look in the rearview mirror just for a moment. If you glance backwards, yesterday's healthcare was, you know, we're well until we get sick, and we don't worry about anything until we need to go to the hospital or to the doctor. And that's changed. We now know that it's much better for us individually. And we also know from a economic perspective, it's better for society if we are able to prevent a disease that was avoidable. And when it comes to cancer, for example, did you know that genetic cancers seem like they're unavoidable, but genetics, which are important to look at, are only responsible for 5 to 10% of cancers. And that means that 90 to 95% of cancers that we deal with are due to our environment, our diet, and our lifestyle. Those are those we can actually change. We have control over those things. And so, whereas, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, we felt like a condition like cancer was a lightning bolt coming out of the sky. What did I do wrong to be struck? Now we're realizing, you know what? There's a newfound confidence that we can do better for ourselves, and we might be able to sort of derail a fate that we don't want to have by moving in a better direction that makes us healthier and also allows us to dodge cancer at the same time. That kind of positivity, that kind of proactive action steps that we can take, I think makes everyone feel better. And then I want to say one more thing about our present day. You know, we all want to age in a healthy way. So whether or not you're, you know, a young person just starting out their career, or whether you're sort of a mid-level or senior-level person, you know, regardless of where you are, everybody wants to age in a healthy way. You know, not everybody wants to live to 100, but everybody does want to age well. Guess what? Of all the features of our health that we need to function well to make healthy aging and longevity sort of desirable, we want to have a healthy brain. The letter that comes after the dreaded C word, which is cancer, is the D word, which is dementia. Okay. And if you think about it, this actually brings it right back home to my own wheelhouse, which is our brain has 400 miles worth of blood vessels packed inside it. These twisting, turning blood vessels are bringing the oxygen we breathe, the nutrients that we eat, and any kind of medications that we take or toxins that we encounter or exposed to right into our brain. So, you know, what's exciting to me now is looking at what the next frontiers are for brain health.
You co-founded the Angiogenesis Foundation. Tell us briefly about your work there. What's happening now? And has angiogenesis become an accepted option to treating disease in our current healthcare system?
Yeah, I got to give you a little background on this. Angiogenesis sounds like a complicated word, a tongue twister, like many scientific words, but it's actually quite simple. Angio, blood, blood vessel. Genesis, how the body grows our blood vessels. So angiogenesis is simply put, how our body grows its circulation. And a lot of people don't know this, but our blood vessel system in our bodies were the first organ system to ever form. So Bob, when your dad's sperm met your mom's egg, and you were just a ball of cells like we all were at the very beginning, and a bunch of stem cells actually, before any organs formed, before you had a face or a leg or a big toe or a hip, you had a ball of cells, and the first organs to begin to form was your circulation. They call them blood lakes. So angiogenesis is the very first thing that happens in our developing bodies shortly after conception. So you know this is important because at the end of the day, when we are born and grow up, we wind up with a 60,000-mile channel. These are the highways and byways of life. So what got me into angiogenesis was I was in college. I read a scientific paper that blew my mind. And that was a paper that described if you cut off the blood supply or prevented blood vessels from reaching a tumor, you could actually prevent the tumor from growing. And in fact, an avascular or a tumor without blood vessels could be kept from growing forever. But the moment a blood vessel touched a tumor in a lab system, that cancer could grow 16,000 times in just 2 weeks. It was like an explosive growth. And to me, that told me the power of blood vessels was something that we need to learn more about. And as I started to learn more about it, and I started to do the research in the lab of the pioneer of this whole field of angiogenesis, his name was Dr. Judah Folkman, I actually began to realize that angiogenesis, blood vessel growth, was the common denominator of both health and disease. And the reason I started the Angiogenesis Foundation, which is a 501c3 nonprofit charitable organization, was because I wanted to have a bigger impact than just working in a lab at a university or working for a drug company trying to develop a single drug. I realized it was a role for an independent third party group that was composed of doctors and scientists that had a vision that if we pulled the bow back and sent a single arrow of blood vessel growth, health, how to keep blood vessels healthy, we might be able to skewer and hit 70 different diseases at the same time. And when I started this in 1994, most of the people that I mentioned this to were skeptical, and they thought, you're going to destroy your career. Nobody wants to study a process underlying disease. People only want to study the end disease itself. Why don't you create a cancer foundation or a blindness foundation or an Alzheimer's foundation? And the more objections and pushback I got, the more I realized how important this was. Nobody was focusing on the common denominator of health or the common denominator of disease. And my hunch proved to be correct, because when we started, there were no angiogenesis treatments. It was only lab research. But within a few years after starting, with our efforts, we were the honest broker of the science, working with scientists, companies, investors, government agencies, medical associations. We were able to help give birth to the first angiogenesis circulation growing treatment for wound healing and diabetes. And then after that came blood vessel control for cancer, for colon cancer at the start, and then the year after to control blood vessels growing in blindness. And it's really never stopped. So, as of today, there are 47 and growing FDA new treatments that have come out of our field. And we've been at the center of all of it. So I have been really privileged by the instinct I had of going against the grain to look at this common denominator of health and disease. And with the help of a lot of colleagues and supporters, we've made a mark, and I'd say a little more than a small dent. I think that we've actually altered the trajectory of modern medicine and science, and that's what keeps me going. Like, that's my mission.
Yeah. So before becoming this best-selling author, a famous speaker, and a researcher, you were and still are a medical doctor. And that means that you were originally trained to treat diseases primarily using pharmaceuticals.
Yes.
When did that start to change?
Well, it's interesting. My origin story begins when I was growing up in the city of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which is a multicultural, multi-ethnic town. And when I was a kid, I was surrounded by these local folk festivals and communities where people with different ethnic backgrounds and cultural backgrounds were always proudly gathering together, showcasing the food and traditions of their homeland and of their heritage. And I was always very interested in the connection between food and culture. Fast forward, when I finished college and I studied sciences, before going to medical school, I felt like I needed to do a gap year. And so I took a gap year in order to study food, culture, and health. So this is before med school. So where did I go? I did my gap year and I moved to Italy and Greece. I moved to the Mediterranean. And this is long before anybody talked about the blue zones or the Mediterranean diet widely, like it wasn't recognized. But I was there living with the people, shopping at the markets, cooking with the yayas and the local people, eating with the families, and talking about health and culture and food. And it made me realize that there was something powerful about the ways that people grew their food, purchased their food, cooked their food, preserved the traditions of their food, ate together, and also attributed their choices in terms of their diet with their overall health and longevity. So then I went to medical school, and Bob, within the first week, I immediately saw that conversation about prevention and food was not going to be talked about in medical school at all, not taught at all. And it wasn't. We were taught to recognize and diagnose disease, to wear around our belt a holster that's filled with all the modern gear and surgery and technology and pharmaceuticals that we could prescribe to intercept disease. And that's what I spent 4 years in med school doing, learning an amazing amount. And I don't think, by the way, I don't think you can really be an ultra doc, you know, if you haven't really gone through full on medical training. And then I did a residency in Boston at the Massachusetts General Hospital in internal medicine. So the entire shebang, I ran ICUs, emergency rooms, you know, like I did the whole hog, but I never forgot in this entire period of training what I was inspired by early on, which is that food, diet, lifestyle, culture, it's part of our humanity, but it's also part of what contributes to our health. In fact, food is the medicine that we take 3 times a day. And as I got better and better, more competent, more expert, more professional in doing drug development, in using pharmaceuticals, and in fact, ultimately, with the Angiogenesis Foundation, being involved with drug developing new generations and new categories of biotech drugs for disease, I realized that we were missing the biggest opportunity in the first place, which is to prevent disease using not drugs, but our diet and our lifestyle. And the diet, again, was something that I really was very close to. I like to cook. I know quite a lot about food. And so for me, it was not just talking the talk, but walking the walk.
Well, I have been a big fan for a long time. You've written 2 best-selling books that are on my bookshelf. The first one was Eat to Beat Disease, The New Science of How Your Body Can Heal Itself. And that book gives easy-to-follow steps on how to use food to heal your body and prevent disease. And then the second book, published in 2023, was Eat to Beat Your Diet, Burn Fat, Heal Your Metabolism, and Live Longer. Just wondering, is there a third book in the works?
Yeah, well, I'm so glad you asked that question, Bob. Look, you know, I wrote my first book. I became an author mostly because I had a story to tell that had immediacy that could impact on people's lives very powerfully. And so while I was initially reluctant to write a book at all, When I wrote Eat to Beat Disease, I didn't realize that, you know, the time was right to share with people my knowledge and give people the tools in order to be able to use food to amplify their own body's health defenses. So that was my first book. I had no idea how well it would do. It literally sold out on Amazon within a few hours after the book was launched. Okay, so Eat to Beat Disease was about your body's health defenses, not about disease. It's about how to prevent disease. Eat to Beat Your Diet was really the sequel, which is, if you can prevent disease, now how do you optimize yourself, which is really around your metabolism. So many misconceptions about metabolism. So I wanted to clear that up and show, as my work moved into that area, how we can actually optimize our metabolism, but also enjoy our food. My strong personal philosophy, I strongly believe that you can love your food to love your health. For so long, we've been taught to fear our food if you want to have good health. I think that's wrong. I think our food is part of our humanity. So in order for us to be better and closer to who we actually are, we have to actually align what we enjoy about food with what we require and want, desire about our health. So you're asking me, what's next? And because I'm a researcher and I think about what I'm doing to communicate about it, I am actually looking at healthy aging. I'm looking at what some people call longevity. I'm interested in healthy aging. And it turns out that the biology in our body that keeps us healthy, the biology that's hardwired to allow us to have a good metabolism, actually extending forward allows us to age in a healthy way. So that's what I'm working on now. I'm not ready to write a book on it yet, but I will tell you that brain health, the clues are all there. If you want to actually look at joy and pleasure, which is something very important as we get older, healthy aging is never losing that ability to feel joyfulness. And if you sort of look at the stereotype of an elderly person in a nursing home who looks depressed, who isn't doing anything they enjoy, and then we sort of say, oh, that person has no quality of life. I'm working on a variety of areas of research to really upend that idea so that we can become old and thrive as we go along. My granduncle, by the way, my great uncle lived to 104, independent and full of life. And so I've got a personal model to actually follow.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, so let's talk about food. Why are certain foods healthier than others?
Yeah, so, first of all, let me frame this out for anybody listening. When we think about food and health, we are automatically, our reflex is to think about all the negative messages that we've been told about food. The chips, the snacks, and of course, there's still this ongoing conversation about sugar and everything else. And there's a lot of negativity around it. And so it makes you feel like you want to stay away from food and you feel guilty. And in fact, the message itself has traditionally been, you know, don't eat this, don't eat that. It's just so terrible. And I don't think that's how food is viewed around the world. I can tell you, as somebody who's researched around the world in different cultures, the healthiest cultures don't think that way. And so what I discovered is that when it comes to food and health, if you filter out all the bad foods for a second and then ask a different question, say, what foods are good for us? Well, it turns out that it's not about superfoods or super supplements. It's not just about the food. It's really every bit about how our body responds to what you put inside it. And that makes perfect sense because that is exactly how doctors think. So, you know, when I went to medical school to train to be a doctor, we thought about how the body reacts to various things. So what I did is started to think about, like, what's in food and what's in the body? Well, I would tell you what's in food. If you take a look at Mother Nature's pharmacy, that's pharmacy with an F for farm, not PH, which is what the drug companies do. Mother Nature's pharmacy is pretty amazing. Because if you go into the grocery store and you look at the first place that you enter, which is the produce section, it is filled with colorful fruits and vegetables. And we all heard, eat the rainbow, all right? Well, there's a lot more colors in a grocery store produce section than in the rainbow. And what's amazing is that those colors that Mother Nature put in, and the natural substances, the natural chemicals that are found in our bell peppers and our tomatoes and in our lettuce, red lettuce, leaf lettuce, and in our kale and our berries and our oranges and our citrus, all these, and our herbs, all of these natural substances are packed with the ability to not only defend the plant as it's growing, but also defend the body if we're eating it. So this is the so-called polyphenols. We've all heard about that term called polyphenols. And whatever we're eating in a plant-based area, okay, vegetables, fruits, nuts and legumes, herbs and spices, they are loaded with these polyphenols, okay? They're loaded with something else as well. They're loaded with dietary fiber. Fiber is something that, you know, maybe your grandparents told you if you ate fiber regularly, it would keep you, it would keep your bowels moving regularly. But it turns out fiber does something a lot more. And so this combination of the polyphenols and the dietary fibers, if you say, what happens when you pop the food in your mouth containing polyphenols and dietary fibers? Wow, that's where the biology becomes really remarkable and amazing. First of all, the body is hardwired with health defenses. We're born with them. And they are firing in all cylinders, these defenses, to keep us healthy from the day we're born until our last breath. What are those health defenses? And why am I telling you? Well, because the health defenses respond to polyphenols. Okay. So let's go through, there's five of them. Let's go through very quickly. First health defense is angiogenesis, our circulation, what I study. Our blood vessels defend our health in a really powerful way. Second health defense is our stem cells. This is not the going to the strip corner, the strip mall, and getting an injection into your knee from stem cells. In my opinion, that's not ready for prime time yet. I'm talking about the natural stem cells in our body that we had when we were babies that still stay with us to help us repair and regenerate ourselves from the inside out. Most people don't know we actually regenerate from the inside out. Number three is our gut microbiome. So this is the healthy gut bacteria. We can talk a little bit more about that. But, you know, it's amazing. 39 trillion bacteria live in and on our body. Most of them are actually found in our lower gut, in our colon. And then the fourth defense system, health defense system, is our DNA, much more than our genetic code instructions. Our DNA is hardwired to protect us from environmental assaults, from ultraviolet radiation, from toxins, from radiation from that come through our ground, from the ground to our body, and from the things that we expose ourselves to, cigarettes, smoke, etc. Our DNA fixes itself. It's like our body's spell checker. You know, you can make all the errors you want, and it'll actually amazingly clean it all up. And then our last health defense system is our immune system, which is responsible for beneficial inflammation when we need to heal. And it's also responsible for our immune defenses that protect us against invaders, invaders from outside of our body, like bacteria and viruses, and invaders inside our body. What do I mean by that? I mean, those inside invaders are cancer cells that form that we don't want them to ever grow up to become a disease. And so our immune system protects us against cancer. So these five health defense systems, angiogenesis, stem cells, microbiome, DNA, and our immune system, they're hardwired. And guess what? The food that we eat, the polyphenols, the dietary fiber, they activate and amplify, boost our body's health defenses. And that's what the secret to healthy eating is. It's not some magic food. There's no such thing as a superfood. It's really the super body. And what we choose to eat has been now shown by scientists to be able to amplify and activate each of those health defenses in a way that lowers our risk of disease.
How can I generally eat healthy so that I know my defense systems are activated and working for me? You developed and wrote in your book about a 5x5x5 framework. Can you explain how that works?
Yeah, sure. Okay. So I just told you there's five health defense systems. We just talked about that. We, on average, if you're like the typical person like me, we encounter food, we make a food decision maybe five times a day, breakfast, lunch, dinner, and maybe a couple of snacks sprinkled throughout. And that means that each of those five times that we encounter, make a food decision, we have a shot on goal. We can decide if we want to eat something, choose something that can activate our health defenses. Now, by the same token, at that same decision point, we can choose to eat something that's going to trash or take down or damage our health defenses too. So it's all about empower, you know, like it's giving us the agency to make the decisions. Do we want to be better or do we want to be worse? For me, I generally want to be better. But, and if you spend more time amplifying your health defenses, you know, every now and then you can eat something that's not so good for you. You know, we all go to a baseball game, we go to a sporting event, or we go to a concert, and, you know, or we go to a party, you know, to go to someone's home. And there's always something there that, you know, like you might like to eat that's a snack or one of your favorite things that are not that great for you. If you spend most of your time taking care of your health defenses, believe me, you're going to bounce back. You'll be resilient enough to come back from a hot dog or, you know, a glass of soda or something like that. You'll bounce back. And so this is what I say. Okay, so how do you do it normally? Well, categories of food that are generally good for you that will activate your health defenses. Pretty much anything in the produce section that you'd find in the grocery store, you know, go to the grocery store, pick up your cart, roll it in the doors, they swing open and bada bing, you're in the middle of the produce section. Pretty much whatever you choose in that section is going to activate your health defenses. And these days, what I say is that if you see something that you know that you like, oh, I love tomatoes in the summer. Oh, man, I really like these berries. Or, oh, yeah, you know, I really love avocado. Definitely put them in your cart. But if you see something that you don't recognize, what do I do with escarole? Or I don't know what this pink pineapple does. You know, what I do with it? Or shiitake mushrooms. I don't know. I've heard of them, but I don't know what to do with them. These days, what's so great, you can whip out your mobile phone. You can go online, type the name of the food, recipe, hit search, and then hit on video and watch somebody explain it all to you and show you how to cook it in a delicious way. And so anything that you get in the produce section is going to be good. Now, I'll also tell you that in the grocery store, we've been told, again, with judgment, that we should stay out of the middle aisles because the middle aisle of the grocery store is filled with bad stuff. Totally wrong. In my second book, Eat to Beat Your Diet, I basically have a whole chapter about going into the middle aisle and going on a treasure hunt. All right? So imagine you're going on a treasure hunt and there's gold in those hills. All right. So like the middle aisles. So you're looking for the gold. You're looking for the healthy foods. And okay, yes, there are lots of junky foods that are not so good for you, the ultra processed foods. Let's call that fool's gold. So you got to go into the middle aisles and kind of dodge the fool's gold. Don't be fooled by that and go for the real gold. So what are the real gold that you can get in the middle aisle of a grocery store? Well, let's just start with some of the healthiest stuff. Beans, dried beans, canned beans, packed with protein, which we all need for healthy aging and muscles, packed with dietary fiber, which activates our gut microbiome, which is good for brain health, immune health, lowers inflammation, good for metabolic health. You know, this is an inexpensive can of beans or a bag of dried beans. That's how powerful it is. Next thing that I tell you about, extra virgin olive oil. Now, in a whole wall of olive oil, go for the extra virgin. That means that you're getting all the polyphenols. Okay, the filtered non-virgin olive oils are the ones where they filtered out the polyphenols. So you want to get the extra virgin stuff. That's the green, peppery stuff that you want to get. It's the highest quality. Anybody from the Mediterranean will tell you how to do that. And you go for that. A couple of other things. Dark chocolate. This is like the piece of news that everyone loves to hear me talk about, is that dark chocolate is gold. And the darker the chocolate, the higher the percent cacao, the more polyphenols there are. Because although chocolate itself, a chocolate bar, is a confection with a lot of other stuff in it, so you want to check your ingredient label, make sure you're comfortable with what's in there. But actually, the darker the chocolate, the more the plant-based polyphenols that come from the cacao bean. All right, so that's really good. And then, of course, you get your coffee and teas, which is a beverage. So besides, you know, having your fruits and vegetables and your spices and herbs, coffee and tea are two of the most popular beverages in the world besides drinking water. So coffee, tea, and water. But tea and coffee are well-researched, well-known to contain polyphenols like, for tea, catechins, specifically EGCG, epigallocatechin 3-gallate. Don't worry about the tongue-twisting name. Leave it to scientists like me. It's a polyphenol, okay? And then coffee, the coffee bean that you use for your morning brew. I drink coffee every single morning. Like it's just part of my pattern. Actually, the polyphenols in it, which includes chlorogenic acid, That's good for brain health. It's good for slowing down cellular aging. So it makes you age more slowly than you might if you were exposed to some toxins. It actually can help starve a cancer by cutting off the blood supply, improves your immune system. It's good for gut health. And by the way, did you know, Bob, that coffee is such an ancient beverage that we don't even have a historical record of where it came from? It predates recorded history. So I'm just telling you, our food that we have, you know, the things that we take for granted in our grocery store are really quite remarkable.
You talked about dietary fiber. What kinds of foods provide dietary fiber? And again, why is it important? 5 years ago, there was a study done at MD Anderson Cancer Center with patients with melanoma, I believe. Can you talk about that as well?
Okay, so you're bringing up something I get very, very excited by, which is the role of our gut in protecting us against cancer and how it connects to food. And if that statement I just said has gotten your interest, let me explain it to you. So our gut bacteria, which mostly lives in our colon, the colon is the large intestines. Okay, it's at the very bottom. It's connected at the very end to our poop chute. But at the beginning of the colon is a kind of like a loose sacky, the sac-like part of the colon, the bowel, called the cecum. Most of our healthy gut bacteria lives right there. And that gut bacteria coexists with our immune system. So what we are now realize that we didn't know when I went to medical school is that 70% of our immune system lives in the wall of our gut. So think about a garden hose. You cut the garden hose in half and you're looking right down the middle. Inside the hollow cavity, that's where the gut bacteria would be in your gut. And in the wall of the cut garden hose, that's inside that wall, that thick wall, that's where your immune system lives, 70% of it. So the gut bacteria talks to the immune system. What we feed our gut bacteria and the specific gut bacteria can influence how well our immune system functions. Now, how does this connect to cancer? Well, it turns out that our bodies form microscopic cancers all the time. And fortunately, our spell check system, that DNA protection, can fix some of these problems. Our blood vessel defense system can prevent cancers from getting a blood supply. So they're basically unable to grow without any nutrients or oxygen. And then our immune system is responsible for patrolling the body, okay, like a cop on a beat. It patrols our body looking for trouble. Oops, I see a microscopic cancer. A suspicious immune system will take out the microscopic cancer. And that's part of how we protect ourselves. So let's bring it back. You eat food that feeds your gut bacteria, or gut bacteria communicates with your immune system. Your immune system conducts surveillance, patrols the streets of your body, looking for trouble. They see cancer and they decide to wipe it out. Okay. That's why we don't get cancer more often. People always say, well, why did I get cancer? I look at it a different way. Why don't we get cancer more often? Okay. And it turns out that if you have a good immune system, and you've got good gut health, and you're eating the right foods, it actually tips the balance in favor of avoiding cancer, dangerous clinical cancers. Okay. So what came out of the MD Anderson Cancer Center is actually related to the work that I do. And actually, the work wasn't just out of MD Anderson. Before that, MD Anderson was building their work on the back of another colleague of mine out of Paris. So, first, everyone needs to know that there is a major breakthrough in cancer, not research, but cancer treatment, okay, based on the Nobel Prize-winning research that our immune system can be jacked up with medicines called immunotherapies. So these are not chemotherapies. These are immune-boosting therapies that can be swallowed, that can be injected, and the immune system will then rear itself up and be supercharged to go after cancers, even after they've been established. Okay, because previously I was talking about microscopic ones. Even if they're big, and even stage 4 cancer spread everywhere, you can actually use immune system to, if you ratchet up your immune system, jack it up, you can wipe it out. So immunotherapy is generating. It's really the biggest breakthrough in cancer research in my entire career. And it's leading to being able to overcome cancers in ways that I never thought I would see possible in my career. I've seen in cancer patients who have stage four cancer, that's game over cancer. Okay. Previously, no hope. All right. Like that's where you send somebody to hospice or palliative care, you know, pain control. Now with immunotherapy, you can, and I've seen this, you can take people with stage four, end of the game cancer. And by jacking up their immune system, you can actually get their own immune system, even if they're elderly, to rear up and reverse stage four cancer to stage zero cancer. Literally, you can wind the clock back and clear somebody with stage four cancer. Now, we can't do this for everybody. And this is where the gut microbiome and the diet comes into play and the work from MD Anderson in Paris comes into play. That treatment, which is leading to, and I use this word very carefully but deliberately, because a lot of doctors don't like to use the word cure. But I'm telling you, I've seen over a dozen people cured of their stage four cancer, like for decades. And they're gone into their second decade. How is that possible? Well, it just shows you how powerful your immune defenses are. Now, I got to give you a big caveat to anybody listening. Okay. I'm giving you big hope, but I'm giving you a big caveat. Right now, it's just the beginning of this era of immunotherapy. And what we're finding is only about 20% of people respond in that remarkable way, maybe even fewer than 20%, but 80% of people don't respond well or at all. It's a dud. This breakthrough, potentially life-saving treatment doesn't work in 80% of people. So researchers, myself included, have been diving in to figure out what do we need to do to make people who are not responders to become responders to this treatment? And what's the difference between somebody who's not going to respond and what's the difference? And what does the person who does respond is able to wipe out their cancer with their immune system? What do they got that the person who doesn't respond doesn't have? And so this is what my colleague Laurence Zipvogel did. She's in Paris. She and her colleagues, they look at 200 consecutive cancer patients, different types of cancer, all getting immunotherapy, and only about 20% of people were benefiting from it. 80% didn't. And she looked at every parameter. Is it age? Is it gender? Is it comorbidities? Is it metabolism? Is it genetic markers? Is it medications they're taking? She looked at everything. Okay. Nothing borne out. There was no difference she could discover between people who responded and did well and lived, okay, versus people who didn't respond and didn't do well, and many of them died, except for one thing. And what she found that made my jaw drop, it was one bacteria. The responders had one bacteria that the non-responders did not have. One gut bacteria, one part of the gut microbiome. If you had it, you made it. If you didn't have it, you wouldn't respond. Holy cow. If that doesn't tell you how important your health defenses are from the gut microbiome, I don't know what does. Okay. And that bacteria is called Akkermansia mucinophila. Most people don't have any more than 3% of it. It's very sensitive to antibiotics. How many cancer patients get antibiotics? A lot. And until recently, the only way to grow your own Akkermansia is actually to have pomegranate juice or eat pomegranate seeds or to have dried cranberries or Concord grape juice. And now we're beginning to discover juice from peach can do the same thing. Black vinegar can do it. There's all kinds of different things that can grow Akkermansia. But until recently, you had to use food to nurture your own gut to grow it. And nobody is telling cancer patients what to do about this, right? Like how many cancer patients are asking their oncologist, hey, doc, what should I eat? And the oncologist, I don't eat anything. Doesn't matter. Just make sure you don't lose weight. Totally wrong. Totally wrong. All right. Where we are now is that like we're beginning to break through the glass ceiling to be able to answer that question. You want to eat foods that grow your Akkermansia that tend to and nurture your gut microbiome. And if you have Akkermansia, you actually can talk to your immune system in a way that allows your body to respond to immunotherapy. And I know this better than anyone else because I did the same thing to boost my mom's acromancy in her immune system when she was 80 years old and had stage 4 endometrial cancer. We got her on immunotherapy to respond completely from stage 4 cancer to stage 0 cancer after only 3 treatments. Okay, so I'm just telling you, like, what gets me up every morning and keeps me excited and motivated to keep doing this work, connecting diet with health defenses, with our ability to fight disease. And don't forget, what I just told you, Bob, is not waving a lettuce leaf and saying, just eat vegetables, you'll be fine. I'm combining medicine and food together with your health defenses. It's like the mixed martial arts of health, right? You use whatever style you need to get to that result that you want. It's really a remarkable time to be in medicine. It's a remarkable time to be in research. And, you know, there's all these crazy things going on in the world that make us feel like maybe things aren't, it's not such a great environment after all. I will tell you that if you look at the lens that I'm looking through, man, are we on the threshold of breakthroughs? Like every single week, there's something new happening.
Yeah. I guess the question is, how do you motivate somebody to change the way they eat? The rates of chronic disease, specifically cardiovascular diseases, cancers, diabetes, obesity, they are still skyrocketing worldwide because of aging populations, sedentary lifestyles, and just bad nutrition. And these kind of diseases account for 75% of global deaths. And if things continue, they say that they're projecting that it could cause 86% of all deaths by 2050. And if that's not motivating people to pay attention and at least consider their diet and lifestyle choices, I don't know what will.
You're so right. I mean, chronic disease is on the rise. We see it all around us. And previously, there wasn't too much we thought we could do about it. So we just kind of sat back and, bring it on. I'm going to live as well as I can and, hopefully leave a beautiful corpse, right? Like that's the very past way of thinking about it. Well, things are different now. And what I would tell you is that we know that the emerging trend that you're seeing, not just in young people, but middle-aged people, older people as well, there are communities forming everywhere. I think, I would challenge anybody listening to this, if you're not sure about how to get healthier, ask around your friends and find somebody who is actually into it now. Somebody's following nutrition, knows something about, educating themselves with what's going on and saying, that podcast I listened, Dr. Lee talking about eating plant-based foods and getting polyphenols and dietary fiber, he's totally right. And, listen, have a friend show you the ropes. That's much better than having, a teacher or professor lecturing at you or your doctor lecturing at you, frankly. I think this is what's happening in society. So we are, as a society, societies around the world, changing our sense of entitlement to choosing foods that can improve our own health, number one. So I think these statistics that you cited are going to change because people are changing their behavior. And if you're not sure how to go about this, I'm saying just ask around your friends and who's into the nutrition part of it and follow the leader, follow your buddy, okay? That's a great way to actually go. Now, there's a whole separate conversation about how not to get misled by misinformation, but I think to get started, this is a good way to go. Most doctors, unfortunately, are not educated to talk about this, but a nutritionist might be. And if you go on social media, you'll find people who are responsible nutritionists. Always look at credentials. When you're listening to people on social media, look at, do they have education? Do they have the credentials to be talking about what they're saying? And always use your gut. If something sounds too good to be true, it probably is. Double check your facts, And again, this is about self-empowerment, but I'll give you, Bob, a flip side to this, to the devastating statistics of 2050 that you were just giving in terms of crushing healthcare costs and leading causes of death. I'm telling you that I'm working in this area of healthy aging. Well, it turns out as of 2 years ago, it's 2026, in 2024, 720,000 people were alive that we know about that are 100 years and older. And so when you have 700,000 people, you can actually do research on them to be able to understand what secret sauce do they have in their body that actually, or what would their diet do they eat, or what was in their gut microbiome, which is something I'm interested in. You know, what is in the gut microbiome of super centenarians, people who live older than 100, 104 and older, right? Like the fact that we can even do research on people who are older than 100 tells you something about how our insights into our body and aging and healthy aging is changing. So, you know, we're discovering which bacteria are higher. I'm not ready to like fully talk about all the research yet because it's still going on. But I will tell you that projections are, okay, that by the year 2050, because the population of centenarians is growing very, very fast, all right, by 2050, there will be 4 million people around the world that are 100 years or older. So if you want something motivating, rather than saying like the rate of disease is going to collapse the whole cause of death, and you know, and that's why you should be healthy, what I would tell you is that look at the flip side, look at the good side, the bright side. You know, do you want to be one of those 4 million by 2050? That's the reason to actually make some good choices, because it's going to be a new brighter world by then. And what we need to do is to just make some easy decisions every day. You don't have to do it three times a day. Do it even start with once a day. Eat something good. Cut something bad out. Eat this, replace it with something good. And then you're going to be on your way. And, you know, in my books, by the way, I deliberately wrote my books this way. I have tables and charts of healthy foods. I did all the heavy lifting to figure out which foods activate your health defenses. And what I tell people who, you know, want an easy way to figure this out without having to, you know, understand the science or anything else, I say, look, get my book, open it up to the table of charts of foods, take out a Sharpie or a highlighter and highlight just the foods that you already enjoy. There's more than 200 foods in every book. Just put a yellow line through the ones that you like or circle them with a pen, photograph that, and go to the supermarket and flip open your phone and look at what you circled or highlighted. Start with that because you already love that food, okay? And if you start with whatever you love already that is already healthy for you, okay, and I help to do all the heavy lifting so you don't need to think about it, you're already way ahead of the game. So you're already doing something good for yourself. And I think anything that we can do as a community to take the work and the worry out of making a healthy decision is what's going to make it easier for people to embark on that healthy behavior. And this is really the core of my work and my career. We're now looking at what causes health, and it's your health defenses. And the more we can take care of our health defenses, the healthier we're going to be. And, you know, if you have a cat or dog or a goldfish or a bird or parakeet or a horse, you know, if you got a pet, you know how to take care of something. And we all need to take care of our own health defenses, because they are going to help us go that whole way on the way to 2050, you know, so we can actually get as old and as healthy as we can get.
Well, we are running out of time, but I want to let listeners know another simple way that they can build their knowledge is to sign up for Dr. Lee's newsletter. It's free. It's always has great, easy to understand and bite-sized information in it. And you can sign up by going to Dr. Lee's website, and that is drwilliamlee.com. I've heard you talk more and more about colorectal cancer. The number of younger people that are getting colorectal cancer these days, is that due to diets?
You know, you're talking about a big mystery that we're all alarmed at in the medical community and the public health community, which is the cancers that we used to think were older people's cancers. When I went to medical school, colon cancer was something that people in their 60s and 70s were diagnosed with. And then, you know, I would say 20 years ago, we started seeing people in their 50s, and we're like, uh-oh, it's getting younger. Now we're seeing people in their 20s, and there's even reports of teenagers getting colon cancer. Something is rotten in Denmark, as they say. We don't know what's going on. We got to figure that out. And, you know, and most people are thinking about environmental factors, like microplastics. I just gave a grand rounds last night, which is another program that I offer where we dive deep into a particular topic. And I was talking about microplastics and, you know, what do? They get into our gut, they cause inflammation, they get into our bloodstreams, they cause clotting, they can even get into our brain. But, you know, there's a real concern that some environmental toxin that we're encountering may be sprayed into our food or, you know, or maybe the packaging that our food comes in or something, you know, is leading to this change in our bodies. Probably not one thing, probably a lot of things. We got to figure this out because if there is some urgency for everybody at any age to, you know, do delicious things that can actually make this decisions that are delicious, that can actually improve their body's health defenses that can help protect them against cancer. Like it's this idea that cancer, some of the cancers like colon cancer are happening at younger and younger ages. And we're looking at environmental exposures and microplastics from food specifically because colon cancer is a full body disease. It's an inflammatory disease, but you know, we do know that foods that we eat, certain foods that we eat, like processed meats, things that we put into our gut, are responsible for causing some types of colon cancer. So we don't know the answer to that, but we got to figure it out. And I suppose if I wanted to give your listeners something practical to do while we're figuring this stuff out, just know that we eat a lot of plastic from the foods that we have. If you can bring your own cloth bag to the grocery store so you don't have to stuff your delicious, healthy fruits and vegetables into a plastic bag, that's better. If you wash your vegetables after you bring them home, just put them in a metal bowl, you know, a plain old kitchen metal bowl, rinse it with running water for a minute. That's a safe thing to do. And try to cut down or cut out plastic that you would use in the kitchen. That's plastic cups, plastic plates, plastic silverware. I mean, look, as we approach seasons where we're outdoors and picnicking and going to the beach, think about all the plastic we encounter. Every bite you take on a plastic fork, you are eating some plastic, my friend. So if you can, you know, bring a metal fork, you know, just wrap it back up and take it home and wash it. Anything you can do. Oh, water. Be really careful. We do want to stay hydrated, but think about all the times in our recent years where, you know, we did what we were told to make sure we were hydrated. We bring some bottled water with our hiking, our vacation at the airport, you know, wherever we're going. And we're just guzzling down that water because, man, we're thirsty. Good. However, we found billions of microplastic particles in water bottles again. So, you know, cut down the plastic you have. That's a way of actually decreasing our exposure to potentially risky substances.
Wonderful. Okay, last question. 16 years ago, you got up on that stage and you gave your TED Talk that opened millions of eyes. If there's one idea, one hope that you want people to take away from this conversation or from all your years of research, what is it?
The food that we choose every day can help us dodge the chances of getting cancer, period.
Dr. William Lee, thank you so much.
My great pleasure, Bob. Thanks very much for having me.
If you want to learn more about generally eating healthier or eating to improve your metabolism or eating to activate your body's defense systems or to ensure you're as healthy as possible, I encourage you to follow Dr. William Lee. He makes eating for a purpose very easy to understand and easy for you and me to take action. As he said, eat simple, meaning don't make things more complicated. Make things simple. Eat things that are more natural, that are plant-based, that are less processed. Food companies will always tempt you with unhealthy options, but when you take control and eat more natural foods, you will instantly know that you're making the right decisions by how you feel both mentally and physically. It's easy to learn more by following Dr. Lee. You can see about the books we talked about today, sign up for his newsletter, get his weekly videos, and learn more simply by going to drwilliamlee.com. Let me spell that out for you. It's drwilliamlee.com. Check it out. You'll be glad you did. Straight Talk for Real Life is produced by HPE. If you've enjoyed this episode, we hope you listen to our other episodes as well. If you're an HPE team member, please remember that there are many resources available to you and your family members that can help you learn and explore many ways to improve your well-being. They are all available through the HPE Global Wellness Program. If you're an HPE team member outside the U.S., you'll find those resources on the Global Wellness page. And if you're in the U.S., you'll find them on myhperewards.com. I hope you've enjoyed this episode as much as I did. Thank you to Dr. William Lee. And as always, thank you so much for listening. Until next time, please take good care of yourself. Let's talk again soon.